This is GamesAtWork.biz with Phaedra Boynodiris, Sandy Kearney, Michael Martin, and Michael Rowe, your weekly podcast about gaming technology and play. The thoughts and opinions on this podcast are those of the hosts and guests alone, and not the opinions of any organization which we have been, are, or may be affiliated with. This is episode 78. The show is already in progress.
So the thing on drones, and with the shift of, you know, manned aircraft to drones, like you're just saying, you can have a ton of cheap stuff, and they can be deployed very, very quickly anywhere.
Did you read
Kill Decision from Daniel Suarez?
I did not.
Oh, okay.
I will.
Put it on your reading list. I air quotes read it while I was in the U.S. driving back and forth to Greensboro, and on Audible. And I'm not normally a big Audible guy, but boy, this was fantastic. And the premise here is that you have autonomous drones whose decision to execute against a target can be performed by the software on the drone itself. That is, you don't need a human somewhere in the world, you know, with a joystick controlling it. You can say, okay, these are the characteristics, this is the target, go off and get them. And thereby setting an autonomous drone in motion, you don't have to worry about someone jamming your radio signal for the guy who's halfway around the world with a joystick. They're going to just do what they're programmed to do.
Right. Well, by the way, we call those in submarines. We already have them. I'm like, it's not that far off when you think about it. A torpedo in a submarine is programmed that way. It's just programmed for a shorter path.
Right, right. Once you launch it, it's going to do its thing, right? It's going to travel in the path.
And it's going to do whatever it needs to do to go to what you've said it should kill. So to me, I'm like, yeah, we're already doing this. So it's not, the difference is just where we're doing it. We're not underwater, and it's not, you know, we can actually see drones. Like there's, you know, again, we've broken through the wave here and out from underneath. And so I look at all that and I just go, really? Well, yeah, I'm not surprised because we're already doing that. It's just called a torpedo and it's used underwater. Yeah. And the new sophisticated ones operate in very much the same way, which is another reason why, as the earlier topic discussion, that, you know, a company who's been building torpedoes or building, you know, bombs or whatever, found it much easier to move into a drone business than a company who was building manned aircraft and calling it a major weapons system that now had human intervention to make the decision. Now, again, that's all in the white ethics side. In the dark ethics side, now you got all the other decisions, right, that have to be made and the problems that surface from when things go awry.
Especially if, you know, something goes wrong. Now, a software glitch could have devastating consequences, for example, right?
It brings a whole new definition to virus, right? If I can do the delayed virus that's, you know, in there and they don't know it's in there. I mean, you can take this to just such... And the thing I find interesting in today's world is none of it is too far off. I was actually down at SIGC for Educators Wednesday. I was in a meeting and we were having this discussion around vulnerabilities, which I liked that topic. And, you know, I think about it. And by the way, it definitely relates to the whole gaming thing. And the reason why I think it relates is because in gaming, you can explore and exploit vulnerabilities to see end results without the negative impact in reality. Mm-hmm. So they're down there, and we were talking about IT security, and this is how it relates. And the discussion was the thousands and thousands of vulnerabilities that come out, and that there's no aggregated way to say what those vulnerabilities would do for any given operating system. They come out one by one. So, you know, it's 1,000 bacteria released every day, but no relationship to how that'll affect a human, a dog, a cat, none. It's just, and that's how it is with computers. It's released by the vulnerability itself. Now you can go dig around and find out about it. And of course, that's what the, you know, security companies and all of the software groups are doing. But now with the new technology and all, you can aggregate it and do so much more with it to both defend and to exploit. And so I look at that and I go, see, in this whole ethics trail on the kill decision of these drones and torpedoes, et cetera, we can't even defend ourselves against the number of vulnerabilities coming out. So it's just much more real. So I'm dying to hear about the book, the rest of the book.
Well, I mean, there's much more to it. So one of the things that you learn pretty early in the book, so I'm not giving away any spoiler alert kind of things, you know, like, you know, about Bambi and Bambi's mom or something, is that the software that is used to provide the intelligence to these drones comes from ants. So there's a researcher in Africa who's been researching ants and their colonies and how they act and react and interact with one another. And so ants communicate with one another through touch and through smell. And they can do that, again, autonomously with one another. So it's not just one of those little parrot, you know, AR quadcopters coming after you. It's a swarm of them.
Right. So yeah, swarm technology is behind that, as well as biomimicry. So that makes sense. Yep.
Exactly. And there certainly is the capacity within ant intelligence, which when you aggregate it across a multitude of very small brains, you actually have a fairly decent intelligence that belongs to the hive. So that's part of the story. I mean, the science fiction is really interesting. And you're validating that there's some science fact behind this as well. So you could have, you know, worker drones. You could have, you know, a soldier, I guess drones would be the other drones too. I'm using drone as the ant mode as well as the computer mode or the autonomous vehicle mode. And you're able to have those interact with one another because they are in fact, you know, able to interact and the model works for it. And the model allows for the communication so that the hive can identify what its target is by communicating with one another. And I bet that's Mr. Michael, isn't it?
It is Mr. Michael Rowe, and he's pinging me. So he's joining us as we speak,
so
I think.
Let me add him to the call.
That sounds good. We'll get 11 minutes together. That works.
Yeah.
It's an exciting podcast today. Lots of great topics.
Hi, Michael. Are you with us?
There he is.
Oh,
there we go.
La.
There we go. Hey, so Michael, I've been recording just a little bit already with Sandy. We've been talking about Kill Decision, so we didn't intro or anything like that, but we've got some raw audio, something maybe worth playing with and doing something with. Where I was going with this was how the drones would communicate with one another using similar ant technology. So they would have antenna, and they could communicate by touch and by smell, and they would have sensors to be able to do that so that the swarm would behave autonomously and not be jammable. So once they were set in motion to do their thing, they were going to go do their thing and you couldn't stop it.
Right.
So I hadn't made the torpedo analogy, but you know, that's exactly it, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Of course. I just like, that's why I'm always laughing about some of this stuff, Michael, because we act like it's all so new. And I'm like, are you kidding me? It's not new. It's just being used in a new way. And it's got some new dimensions to it. But the reality of it is, and by the way, you know, again, the white ethics, black ethics discussion, dark ethics discussion says that, you know, you got to put something in there to stop this stuff just because, right? Because I call it that factor. It's the just because factor. I don't care what anybody thinks of perfection. It doesn't exist. So just because, we always have to have an off switch.
Well, right. And by the virtue of having an off switch, you now create a vulnerability.
That's exactly right. So it's not a question of not having vulnerabilities. It's a question of what kind of vulnerabilities are you going to, you know, defend against?
Planned,
you're either going to defend
against
a rogue drone that does something you know, and now there's other ways to do that, right? So, you know, you can go back to the old Scud versus Patriot missile things, you know. We used to laugh about that one. So when in the day when, you know, all the Scuds were being launched, or the Patriots were, you know, we would say, you know, the Scuds had 100% accuracy because they'd launch them and then a Patriot would hit them every time. So we were like, you know, we were jokingly saying, yeah, you know, the Patriot missiles, yeah, they were great, high tech, whatever. And you know, I love that because you launched four at a time initially, you know, when they were on auto, it was like, boom, 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 boom. Well, you know, there goes $1 billion out the door. Do we really need to launch four of them? I mean, there's all kinds of questions with this stuff that arises when, you know, you put real operations into this versus the theoretical engineering aspects. And, you know, And then there's the whole thing about, you know, don't bring me the, as Wynn said, he used to be in the Department of Defense Logistics, and he used to say, don't bring me a $10,000 or $1 million missile to blow up a $10,000 truck. You know? You
got, oh, come on. We all want $1 million missiles.
Well, you're going to have them. And the thing is, they won't cost $1 million. And I think that's where the real differentiator is in this space, is cost and the ability to manufacture. So again, you know, what if all the software makes its way to open source, and now you can build your own drone with your own open source software
with your 3D printer?
Yeah, build it on your 3D. You know, this stuff is not so sci-fi. Michael Rowe, just so you know, when we were talking about the book, Michael Martin brought up Kill Decision, and I said the technology already exists. We call it a torpedo. It's just, well, different.
That was the whole point, right? Of that whole book. Most of his books are based off of existing technologies. I just finished reading Influx this morning.
Well, I have that now on Audible too, so that's going to be my plane reading. No spoilers.
So you can't give me a spoiler on this one, and we got to tell everybody in our audience and put a link out there. These are probably books of choice if you like that kind of sci-fi stuff, and it's funny.
I won't spoil it.
All right. Well, obviously, I'm behind you guys in reading up on my sci-fi and defense style books, so I got to get busy on that because I've been busy reading other stuff like Rushkoff's Present Shock and.
Oh, I read that.
Yeah, I loved it. Now, what's the most recent one that I've read? I can't remember. I've been reading so many.
My most recent non-fun book, but still good, was the Johnny Ives design book. Not the book about Johnny Ives and his influence on design.
Okay.
Oh. And that was.
And how was that?
It was good. Basically, kind of progressed. Kind of an unofficial autobiography. No, not an unofficial autobiography. That would be really weird, wouldn't it?
This is why you have to get.
I didn't seem to write this book. I'm taking no credit on this book that I wrote about myself. It's unofficial.
Well, there are books out there like that, by the way. That's the beautiful thing about the internet.
Well, I mean, I heard the reviews and the author speak on a couple of podcasts, and I thought, oh, it's probably interesting because, you know, you're getting some insight into, like, the guy's teacher, Johnny Ives' teachers, right, about, you know, what kind of guy he was. So I was just wondering what you thought of it, that's all.
It was good. It wasn't, you know, like the Jobs biography was really good. This was good. You know, I enjoyed it, but would I go out and go, oh, I got to read the end? No, I've read it. Big check mark. So.
Well, shift gears a little bit, because I like the drone discussion and all, and we're talking about books, so let's move to movies, since we've now added TV book and movie review into our podcast, and that is, have you guys both seen the Lego movie now?
Oh, no. I want to. I actually had a team event set up.
No, I had hoped while you were in town that we could have worked some time out, but my schedule got all screwy.
I've seen them all because, of course, when you have kids, you have to see this. But I'm here to tell you guys, of all of them, it's probably one of the best because it's just filled with adult humor as well. And you really got – I mean, I have to go see it again because I missed so much stuff the first time around because I really was watching it from a kid's view. And then all of a sudden it dawned on me. I'm like, that wasn't kid-like at all. That was total adult humor. And I was amazed at how many adults and kids were, you know, not just mom and the kids, but mom, dad and the kids, or, you know, mom, dad, grandma and the kids, like a lot of adults were in the theater, and the movie was fantastic. It was worth, I think, well done. But why do I even bring it up? Well, I'm here to tell you guys, you want to talk about drones and things being 6 degrees of separation. I'm looking at these movies saying it's amazing how many of these movies have fewer and fewer actors and actresses. And how many more movies have, you know, just are completely made from the fabrication, the animation, the special effects, you know, look at Gravity, look at Lego. I mean, we all know that, but the ones that are really making a lot of money and moving to the top very quickly. And it was just phenomenal to see. Phenomenal.
Well, I'm still very excited about it. And actually, you know, there's another Lego thing that I'll plug in here, too. The new Lego guns, you know, that the little Lego characters have actually shoot. Oh my God.
Don't shoot. No. Oh man. That's a song by Devo.
Yeah, but it's not nearly as cool as the Lego gun that shoots.
Well, we used to build our own with Fischer Technic combined with Lego, right? Which I guess is kind of the Mindstream stuff now. Mm-hmm. And we would build things that would like fly stuff across the room, but they were like, we would build a gun that you could hold, not that the little Lego guy could hold.
Yeah.
Well, and that's cool too. I like that as well. So, you know, how all these things in my mind kind of click right back into games are that we're using fewer people. We're doing things that are engaging and entertaining. We're liking them because they are giving us puzzles. And in many cases, the books and the movies that we're talking about, we're reviewing, are puzzles that the audience members are trying to solve. And I do know, and Sandy, I'm sure you're going to get there pretty quickly too on Kill Decision. You'll be like, the answer to this puzzle is this. It's this. It's this. Come on, characters, realize it.
Yeah.
but
well, that's the reason why I like the Lego.
Ah, okay, good. Yeah, well, I still don't know what the heck the red brick is.
Figure it all out.
I don't know what the red brick is. I know the red brick is important, but I don't get yet what it is.
That's my point. When you get to the end of the movie and it all comes together and you just sit there, and then there's just the after effects, which I can't tell you guys because it'll spoil it. But, you know, I take my kids through the checkout line and now they're saying new words for old things. And it's just amazing the implications that, and of course, you know, Lego has taken off anyway. And by the way, it's all, you know, life as a part of play and gaming. I mean, at the end of the day, I think this is so amazing to me to watch the derivatives of play. That's what this is. It's a derivative of play, entertainment, gaming, all of it. And, you know, we love derivatives, you know, well, we love derivatives.
Except when we have to do them in math.
No, they were easy in math.
Yeah, I know they were easy in math. So, but let me click onto that too, because earlier today I had the great fortune of being one of the executive sponsors of a manager roundtable event. It was a discussion on motivation and mentoring and all kinds of stuff like this. And we started off the event, yes, believe it or not, with a game. And it's one that you guys are probably familiar with. You hand out a bunch of coins to people in the room. And then you're asked to tell something about your own history that from the date that's on the coin. You know, when was the coin was minted in 1982 or it was 1991 or that sort of thing. And that game was a great, great, great entry point into a group of managers who didn't really know one another that well, but to open up and to be honest and have authentic conversations about motivation for themselves and their employees. And we covered one of Dan Pink's series of videos on motivation. I'll share that with you guys too. You've probably actually seen this before, but it was
it was
fantastic. It was just really it was 10 minutes of the video after playing the game, and then it was just like a torrent of information, and wouldn't have happened if we didn't start it by getting people into a safe mode and into a playful mode. To be able to explore their stories and their experiences with each other.
So it's interesting you say that, Michael. So I would submit to you that in the industrial age, what we did is we had icebreakers and they were only allowed to be 3 minutes long and blah, 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 blah. So we had this very mechanized approach to the game that went along with all these workshops, right? Mm-hmm. Whereas in today's environment, it's much more fluid. And this is the difference is, you know, again, it's a derivative of play. We all love that. And we're not going to restrict it to the 3 minute segment that's at the beginning of the agenda that was a linear activity that's only meant to do da 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 da. Instead, what we're going to do is let that permeate the entire existence of the relationships that need to be built in order to be productive and well versed, et cetera, all the stuff you wanted to achieve. And you know, then you build on that. Yeah, I'd say great with Pink's thoughts on autonomy and mastery and purpose. And there you have it, because we're in a very, very different world. In some ways, this is the dichotomy of today's world. We are more monitored. We have more surveillance. People know more about what we're doing every second of every day. And yet we are allowed to be more free to do things than we've been able to do. Isn't that interesting?
And we like it. We love it.
And we encourage it. We do more of it.
Yes, that's right. And so I would say here's to... You know, more games, more gaming, more. But again, I would also tell you guys, and I would say to our listeners, think about what this is actually going to be called in 10, 15, 20 years. I don't think it's going to be called gaming.
It's going to be called work.
I don't think it's going to have this big title that says, here's what you're supposed to do and here's how you're supposed to do it. I just think that's all left over from the industrial age, because that's the only way we can figure out to make it work today. But I was just today reading some stuff from Tim Brown, IDEO. I love his work. And he was talking about Emily Philant, who's done this stuff with If You Build It. And so she's got a whole program for that. And of course, my son's school, they have a Lego lab. They have Innovation Friday. They have 20% time, blah, 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 at Mater Dei in Lansdale, Pennsylvania. This little tiny school out of the middle of nowhere. They used IDEO to redesign their classrooms. They would have never done any of that if it weren't for this whole approach to playful learning and gaming at work. But I'm telling you, they don't call it that. They don't care. They don't think of it that way. So what's it going to be like in 10 years? I'd challenge all of you to say, what are we going to call it in 10 years beyond work?
Well, you hit the nail on the head from Pink's book on mastery, autonomy, and purpose. I mean, kudos to you for remembering that so clearly, because that exactly was the story. And in the video, Dan Pink goes back in time, metaphorically, to explain to his economics professor from years ago. It's like, here's what's going to happen. You're going to have intelligent people who are going to take their spare time and do high quality work for free, and then they will give the product of that work away. And he was imagining that conversation with his economics professor and imagining her reaction of, you must be insane.
Exactly.
But that's exactly what's happened, right? So what you're describing is another 10 years from now. What does that look like?
Okay, so while I'm all into the sharing culture, the free culture, Pink's discussion here, I think the one thing that we tend to overlook, and we overlook this consistently, people will do that when they have an underlying level of economic security first.
Agreed.
Right? And so, one of the things that bloggers and podcasters and everybody gets all wrapped up on that mentality is they assume that transition to free culture, to the desire to build and make and to give it away for free, is an end state. It is not an end state, in my opinion. It is a continuum between, and the maker movement is a really good example of this, where you have, lawyers who at night build things as engineers, right? Because that's what they like to do, and they have the freedom and the ability to do that. When you're young and you're in school, you have the freedom to express and to make and to build and give it away for free, because you have already met, Maslow's needs elsewhere. And so one of the things we need to figure out is, how do you continue to drive that play and that giving nature while still addressing for the basic needs that people need to have? And that's a balance that really takes us back to the purpose of the podcast of games at work. How much is work, 10 years from now, is this whole gaming mindset work, or is it games? Is it fun? And how do we get to that balance? And how do we help move society forward so that we have the basic needs met, as well as the desire, the playfulness, the ability to create, right?
Right, but
without
Michael,
undermining
that's why,
the first.
That's why I say to you, it's not going to be called that, eventually. Like, I couldn't agree with you more. And Pink says this, by the way, in all of his materials, is that, yes, you have to be able to work and have the earning and the living, and we need to pay people a fair wage. I think one of the differentiators in today is the standard of living is people are willing to accept less. So less is more in a lot of ways. And one of those ways is I'm willing to accept less in my material environment to have more in that environment. It doesn't mean I want to give it away. It doesn't mean I want to be at the bottom of the hierarchy, but I'm willing to sacrifice that. And that's what we're seeing happening even in the whole aging groups of the younger, a lot of the millennials. They're willing to settle for less, and they want to go out and help solve some of the world's big problems. So I just think you see that tectonic shift going on between generations. And one of the mechanics that's been introduced is gaming. But again, I would submit to you that's only because we don't know what else to call it. And it hasn't, it's going to be an ongoing dynamic evolution.
Well, it's gaming and it's social, right? It's the social interaction, the need to create together, right? To play together, that allows that shift to take place.
Or to achieve. I mean, I think that's the other thing. I see a lot of people playing these, you know, we talked about it a few podcasts ago, the citizen science stuff, where I don't even care what you're doing on the other end of the world. I'm being innovative and I'm going to create and play something and I'm going to break the rules because that's what I get to do in your game. And no, I may never see what anybody else does. And yet I've created a cataclysmic change that scientists didn't see. So, you know, I do think it gives us a chance on many levels. And that's the secret to this stuff is it's so many different levels. It's multifaceted. It's this, you know, kind of evolutionary piece that's going on.
Yeah.
Less linear, more parallel.
For me, it's all about engagement. I mean, that's becoming one of these, you know, laden buzzword bingo kind of words again. But when people's eyes are shining, when they know they're doing something that is making a difference, it clicks into the purpose kind of discussion from Pink and the like. It clicks into the social aspects as well. People are engaged when they're doing something that they feel matters and that they're gaining a degree of mastery out of too. And yes, we call it games right now, and people play those games because they're having fun and they're making a difference. And it matters to them and the people that they play with. So, you know, in a lot of ways, that is work, right? People decide that they're going to affiliate themselves with organizations, volunteer and paid, that are furthering their overarching aims. And in many ways, they'll say, you know, look, I'm sticking around and I'm making a difference. And I'm doing that precisely because I'm putting my own ding in the universe. Did I get all four of the corners on the bingo card today? I don't know.
Almost 100% buzzword compatible.
Well, at the end of the day, it's funny because we've gone from, you know, drones to, you know, this whole deep philosophy about the future and where gaming will go. And I agree with you, Michael Rowe, that none of this is the end point. You know, these are all just stops along the way. And I think that's another really important piece of this is that's, again, the difference between the game that's, you know, got the end in mind and it's closed system and the game that's, you know, no idea where it's going to go. And it's influenced in so many ways. And, you know, the new technology has allowed us to experience that in a way I don't think anybody could have ever imagined. And to be able to, you know, step into parts of complexity that we could have never in the past done. And, you know, I saw that. So as I was saying earlier, I saw that this week at the SIGC education event going on down in Atlanta, Georgia. And, you know, just so many brilliant people asking all kinds of amazing questions. And by the way, that whole thing for us was about the computing in context work. And I look at it and I go, well, that's gaming. Gaming is a context for computing that allows people to learn, and the NSF has been, you know, kind enough in their own way to fund all of this effort. So, you know, I think it's a context question,
and that is the NSF, not the NSA.
That's right.
Yeah, make sure we're specific.
Just gotta make sure we get that one out there correct.
Yeah, the F is for fun. Yeah, that's right. And great work, though. You know, and I love it to see all these computer science folks, you know, really leveraging and going into, like, one of the groups is music. So computing in context with music. And then there's one that's computational linguistics. And there's one that's the internet security piece. And the other one's web science. And web science is a growing field. And again, they're all more than willing to look at the context of gaming for anything to learn. And, you know, we've been doing that. We've done that for a long, long time and in a lot of cases. So context is my key word going into it. So maybe next week's podcast can be on context. And on that note, you guys, I have to say I stayed over. I got to go. I'm in the throes of, as I've told you guys, the annual events that go on with organizations and corporations.
Absolutely.
So, but I wanted to squeeze time out.
Yeah, thanks.
I miss you guys. Everybody, I hope everybody out there is enjoying the podcast, and we have a growing market, I've noticed, and so thank you for those of you that are listening to us and adding to it. I've gotten lots and lots of comments, by the way, on my Twitter account from listeners, so I think that's a good sign for everyone, and we want to hear more from people, I think.
Absolutely.
As well as feedback, ratings, and interaction, engagement. You know, we're all about that here, as you can tell.
Absolutely. I'm going to leave the two of you to go on with your discussion, because we don't need to shut the podcast down just because I need to depart. But I'll say thanks to everybody. Thanks to you guys, and stay healthy, and warmer weather is coming on the East Coast.
That's what you say. We've got freezing rain falling since last night at 6.
I made all my neighbors take down the let it snow signs. Get rid of those signs. It has snowed enough.
Have a great rest of your weekend, Sandy. We'll talk to you later.
See you, Sandy.
Take care.
Yeah. So Michael, there's one other thing that I had in mind. Maybe you've got a couple others yourself, but the
not a thing. Brain is empty.
Well, the whole Flappy Bird thing has got me kind of thinking, right?
Oh, so speaking of Flappy Bird, did you pick up? What's it called? I picked up
Happy
the
Bird?
Flappy Bird clone.
There's been a lot of clones.
Buffalo Wings, which is actually been reviewed by the creator of Flappy Bird.
No, I have not, but I will tell you that my son has Flappy Bird on his iPod, and I told him he ought to put it up on eBay with some of the other ones. Because,
oh yeah, sell it for gazillions.
There are people who apparently want to pay a lot of money for this particular game, and if you've got it, you've got it. If you don't, you don't. How does the Buffalo Wings work?
It's exactly the same game, and instead of birds, it's a buffalo. And as you're flying through, I've gotten to like level 9. If you get more than a score of 1, it will give you facts about buffaloes as part of the okay. I've got to get at least through to 2 so I can give you a fact.
I need a fact. Buffalo facts.
3, 3, 4, 4. Oh, okay. Oh no, they only give you one when you get a high score. Where's my fact? So right now my high score is 9. It's gonna take forever to get past that. But like one of the facts was, you know, what the hump is on their back and how they use the muscles in that thing to strengthen their neck, and they use their head as a snowplow.
I thought that's where they keep their satellite arrays so that they can communicate with one another.
Yes. Yes. So the Germans would have us believe.
Well, where I was going with this was ostensibly the author of Flappy Bird claims that he took it off the market because it was too addictive.
Yeah, it was too much crap he was dealing with.
Well, I mean, there are people who are writing him about all the time that they're wasting on his application, and I don't know. I mean, to me, I'm waiting to say well played, because no other app has gotten this kind of attention as a result of being pulled from the App Store.
And how much did it only cost him to get all the fake reviews at the beginning in order to get that knee of the curve to get real reviews to start happening?
Apparently not that much.
Yeah, it's a couple grand.
Yeah, not that much. So you know, we've talked about engagement. We've talked about the attention economy. We've talked about a lot of these things. How can something like a game as simple as Flappy Bird fit in with the subjects that we were just talking about? You know, when we think about games and playing and moving forward, you know, it doesn't
well, Flappy
need to
Bird
be...
is kind of the thing that we talked about a long time ago, right? About, you know, that just one more move.
Yep.
It's such a simple game, and it's such a simple endorphin rush for almost little to no time commitment.
Yep.
That you go, oh, I'll spend 5 more seconds on playing it one more time. Every single game is a one more move.
Okay. All right. Maybe I'll buy that. I mean, I haven't played it before, but I've seen enough of it that I kind of get the way that it works. The games that have started to creep into my time are Threes. So I've played that quite a bunch of late. In fact, E-Predator recently tweeted one of his scores on that. And so I use that as a means to engage with him on Game Center. It's like, here, Ian, let me show you what my high score looks like.
So how bad did you beat him by?
It was pretty bad. But
that's what I figured. I know you. You wouldn't engage him if he was beating the pants off of you.
Yeah, well, and he's got other things he's playing on his Xbox and stuff like that. So, you know, I can't blame him. But I also have another friend or two who's playing Threes, and they have taken me to task. So I need to crack the 10,000 point barrier, and I have not managed that as yet.
Ooh, very nice.
Yeah. So I'm playing that, cool. and I am playing another game that you'll say, okay, Michael, here we go with the 8-bit stuff again, called Disco Zoo.
And, oh God. Just the name. It's like the increased conglomeration blobbing together of even more things that would drive me nuts.
Actually, it's really quite cute. It's a little game where you go and you're rescuing animals to place them in your confined zoo. So let's
rescuing them to put them into a trap.
let's kind of, you know, figure that one out for a moment. And as you put them into your zoo and you get more and more
also
animals.
By Pocket Gamer, I see.
Yeah, well, you know, there you go. They've created a nice little interface. The music kind of bugs me, except the disco music. I like that a lot. The animals fall asleep, and when they fall asleep, they're not generating coins for you. And the coins are used to fund your trips to go and rescue more animals from farms or savannas or things like that.
Mm-hmm.
So the disco music is fun. And you can start having a disco by using disco bucks, which are the premium currency.
I was waiting for the premium currency in this discussion.
Yeah. So, you know, this is how these games are done.
So, are you still playing Tiny Tycoon, or have you given up?
No, I'm still playing Tiny Tycoon. And
I bought Tyler's, just to let you know.
Did you? Well, I've tried to buy Cameron Indoor Stadium a couple of times, but I don't know. The person who owns it doesn't want to sell it.
I can imagine that, right?
Well, given my in-game name, I can imagine why not. but I went ahead and did buy the Fuqua School of Business, so you'll be expecting a bill from me shortly.
Okay. So Disco Stew, I mean Zoo?
Disco Zoo. Yeah. So that's been my fun as of late.
Cool. Yeah, I'm still stuck, if that's the right term, playing the Real Racing 3.
Ah, yes.
Got more people hooked on it.
Good.
Have you started playing it in any way?
I haven't, because I'm running out of space. You know, my devices do not have nearly enough space on them. And now that I'm downloading audiobooks and other stuff like that, it's kind of like, space is becoming a premium.
You know, after you listen to stuff, you can delete them.
I do.
Okay.
Especially our own podcast. I delete our own podcast really quick.
It's like, yeah, I've been there, done that. Click. Yeah,
I've heard this before. So no, I haven't started that, but I have dropped off a little bit. You may have noticed this on The Simpsons Tapped Out. And
yes, you have.
And you know why I dropped out?
It's getting boring?
No. I mean, I've enjoyed the game and I have fun with it and stuff like that, but the reason why I dropped out, it's pretty simple. With a recent update to the game, it requires you to enter your password and username again, which, you know, I happen to know my username pretty well, but my password, I don't. I store that in 1Password and have it generate one that's secure for me, because I follow good security practices. And the newest update doesn't allow me to cut and paste that new password in on the game.
Yes.
So you know what? I haven't entered in my password, which meant I've stopped playing the game.
Ah, but don't you have 1Password on another device?
I do. I've got it on several other devices because I love that software so much.
So you only have to type it in. You only have to type it in the one time.
I know.
Not every time.
But that's the problem. It's like, okay, I play Tapped Out on my iPad, and I don't always have my phone or my computer or something else nearby.
Mm. Yeah, well, I've actually started going in and deleting games off my machine just because I've got plenty of space, but I've gotten kind of bored of a bunch of them, so I've started removing them because I'm not playing them anymore. It's almost sad. You get there and you open it up and you hold down for a second. You get the jigglies. You go, oh, do I really want to delete this? I remember all those good times I had playing Zork Adventures on my iPad. No, let's delete it.
No, that's rough. That's rough.
It's tough. It's like deleting my children.
did you keep Plants vs. Zombies?
Yeah, I've got both PVZ and PVZ2.
Yeah,
and I've kind of stopped playing them completely.
Yeah,
I should delete.
I have two.
I've got a bunch of Angry Birds still on there. Every once in a while, I'll go in and do Angry Birds Space or Star Wars, but I'm getting ready to delete them too. It's just the hype has ended.
Yeah.
I'm actually looking at stopping some of the subscriptions I have on some MMOs that I play just because I don't have time to play them anymore. It's sad.
But then your characters will go away into the character ether, won't they?
Well, that's why I said some, not all. It's really interesting on how do you keep the fun, right?
Mm-hmm.
The fact that, twice a day I have to go into Tiny Tycoons or into Simpsons or some other, game to keep the streak alive in order to get the extra perks.
Yes.
As an example, right? Or to, do the farming. I mean, let's talk World of Warcraft for a second. I'm maxed out on like multiple of my characters on levels, and there's some farming you do in order to get materials and in order to do some cool crafting to get super things, either weapons or armor or whatever.
Right.
And I'm finding that I'm having to try to make, 20 minutes a day, which I haven't been able to do in the last 2 weeks, to go in to do the farming just so that at some point in time I'll get something cool, which I don't have time to play with anyway.
The end game is not worth the process to get to the end game, essentially.
Exactly. And so at what point, and Tiny Death Star as an example, right?
Yep.
At what point did you give up?
I didn't really give up. I just stopped playing, right?
It wasn't my rotation.
It's not a rotation.
It becomes a daily thing that you have to spend X amount of minutes. And you start adding up all those minutes, and at what point do those minutes not provide enough dopamine to make it worthwhile to spend that time?
Yeah, well, some of those games actually tell you how many minutes you've played on them, and that to me is almost like, how some of the fast food establishments are now putting up on their menu the number of calories that getting when you buy, that big juicy burger at Five Guys that looks, really yummy.
Oh, you don't want to do that. You don't want to see their calories.
I have. It's like, you know what? I'm not going to get the double patty here thing. I think I'll go with the single one. And okay, put the bacon on. What the hell?
Add those extra 300 calories for bacon, but don't worry about it.
But you know what I do? I find that if I'm like on a podcast or something, ooh, I just collected $50 in Tiny Tycoons. You just play, a little bit while you're doing that.
I'm sorry, I was clicking.
Can you repeat the question? I was just clicking.
Yeah, see, that's one of the things I've really, over the last year, tried to drive focus and not do that. Because it really does, how do you make sure that you're executing on all cylinders in everything you do? And while we all believe we can multitask, we can't.
No, we can't. Oh, but I do have an important question to ask you about Tiny Tycoons now. I'm looking at it.
Yes.
Aren't you glad that I didn't make you an employee of mine at the Dean Smith Center?
I have you as an employee somewhere. I just don't remember where.
I very cautiously and deliberately did not make you an employee of that particular property because I knew it would not.
Do you actually know what places you're an employee at for other people?
I think you can look that up. I think you can check it out.
Ah, okay.
I mean, you know.
Well, you can make me an employee at Fuqua.
I could. I think I've got you as an employee somewhere else.
Yeah. Well, it's funny. I had to up. So Tyler's was really expensive, right?
Yeah.
Which means it must be a popular place on Foursquare.
Yeah, that's right? My understanding, yes.
And it was already a two-story building when I bought it.
Mm-hmm.
And I realized as you upgrade all the way up to four-story, the more popular it is, the more expensive it is to build everything up. But I now have so much regular dollars, not the premium dollars,
right,
that, you know, leveling things up is not an issue anymore. The problem is, in order to make the game meaningful, I need to buy more trucks. Because every day I run out of supplies. And that's... I would need to buy more trucks, and I could use premium currency for that. I also need to use premium currency to buy more property. So it's gotten to the point where it's about to be deleted. It's right on the edge.
Well, I haven't had the truck problem. I have plenty of supplies. But
I've been leveling up all my businesses.
Yeah, I've been doing that too. I haven't sold many of them. I've tried to buy some from other people. That hasn't really worked all that much. Oh, look at that. What are the Fink's Jewelers? Why'd you buy Fink's Jewelers?
It was a misclick, and I said, what the hell? I think that's where I have you working.
Oh, is that where I am? Let me check it out. I'm looking at Fink's Jewelers right now. I will go and visit it, and then maybe I can see if that's where I'm working. I think there's a notification that says, you know, where are you working? And then it doesn't say anything else from that. So if we look at info...
Maybe I should look at you on mine and I can tell you where you're working.
No, I can't tell if I'm working there or not. I can't even see it. Oh, geez. So all this time I could have had you working at the Smith Center and you would have never known?
Yeah, I wouldn't even care.
Yeah.
Because you know what? It's just a game.
No, it's not. It's like the Super Bowl. It's Saturday. And I've been
Sunday, Monster Truck Rally.
So I've been watching the Travelocity roaming gnome, who has come to Chapel Hill and has gone to a variety of Chapel Hill establishments. And the Twitter feed has actually been pretty funny. And I believe that the gnome will be heading to Durham. I don't know if it's today or tomorrow in anticipation of the game. But we'll also be doing some other stuff. So it's at Roaming Gnome is the Twitter handle. It's a big game.
There's a big game.
Big.
Yeah, so I don't see how I can tell where I have you working.
You probably have to wind up going into each of your properties because your properties have like three slots where you could have a worker be working. And because your friends can be workers for you for free, then you could place your friend wherever you want your friend to be working.
Uh-huh. I see you have a lot of properties in Budapest.
I think I have two. I've got one in Bratislava. I've got one in Hawaii. I own the BMW factory in Greenville, Spartanburg, in Greer. So I've got a couple of interesting things. I jet around. I get around.
I get around, round. I get around.
So I love this game. I mean, it's fun for me because you can start to, you know, play around with some of the real life areas. What would make it even a little bit more interesting would be to be able to do something interesting to your friends besides just gifting stuff. You know, there might be a way to improve your friend's property. That would be kind of fun. There might be a way to create, you know, roads and infrastructure around it. There's a lot of neat things that could happen still in this game.
Well, I just tried to buy something from you. Tell me what happened on your end.
Oh, let me bring it up. Hang on a second. I've seen you playing the game once or twice before in the game, and I've walked past and give you like a high four, I think, because these characters have four fingers.
Is that you?
I don't know if that registered on your in your gameplay.
Hey, that's you.
Yeah, I was hanging out at Fink's.
Yeah, I just fired you from there.
Oh, man.
See, this is what gaming's really about. It's the social aspect of firing your friends.
Why would you do that? I was doing such a good job. Binks was rocking. All right, the Carolina Capital Market Lab just got upgraded, so that's good.
Yay! What's the Carolina Capital Market Lab?
It's a lab within Keenan Flagler.
Carolina that has a capital market?
Yeah.
Okay, just
so. Yeah, I can see some characters that are around me near Finks right now. I don't see you, and I have no notifications that I've been fired.
Yeah, so I actually sold Finks so that I could buy something from you.
Oh, okay, so let me check out here now to see what we have here. Nope, hasn't registered yet.
Hmm. Very interesting.
I'm sure it'll convey that there's an offer at some point. I had an offer in place for a while for the guy that owns the mini manufacturing facility in Oxford in England, and that person never responded. I do own the coffee shop that's in the lobby of Apple's headquarters in Cupertino.
Ah, cool. So now see if you have the offer.
Okay.
It looks like it had a hiccup and burp.
That could be. So checking it out. Oh, yep, there it is. There's an offer. Just showed up and for the Duke Fuqua School of Business. Let's see what you're offering me for it.
$95.
Oh, yeah, forget it. Get out of here. So we'll view the I can view the offer.
See, this is kind of like, you know, one of the really big things on YouTube nowadays is watching people play a game walkthrough. Yep. This is a game walkthrough for all our listeners of Tiny Tycoon. Doesn't this sound fun?
Yeah, over audio, even better. Check this out. Okay, so I'm going to reject your offer. There
no.
you go. Rejection.
That wasn't very nice of you.
Oh, well, you fired me from Finks.
Maybe you weren't working at Finks. Did it tell you you got fired from Finks?
I didn't get anything about that. I just wanted to buy some of the Duke landmarks in order to make people unhappy at Duke.
Let's see. That's not very nice of me. Or you. Especially since you're only a level 36 Baron.
I know. That's kind of where I am.
Yeah. I have a free property slot open.
But I've got the Langos Buffet in Budapest where they make the best langos in the city.
And I'm sure that means something to somebody who understands what langos is.
If you were to come here, I would be able to show you in person.
Yep, and my trip for next week has just been canceled, so I will be here.
All right, well, and I will be in the U.S. as well, and I will hopefully be doing a little bit of tweeting and a lot of basketball watching at the ACC tournament in Greensboro.
What is this basketball you're talking about?
Oh, round object. Goes yes. into a hoop.
There's a great basketball game inside of Tiny Ninja, or Clumsy Ninja.
Clumsy Ninja.
You been playing that yet?
No.
You should.
I don't have room.
You need more time in the day.
Besides, I already am a Clumsy Ninja. I don't need to play one. I am one. I know exactly what it's like.
Well, everybody, I think you've been suffering through our show enough this week.
Well, it certainly is a long one. It might even be split into two. Who knows?
That might be the best thing to do. And if so, all of this will have been removed.
It will be gone. You'll never even know.
Okay. Well, everybody have a great weekend, and we'll listen to us or talk to you or do that other stuff on the Flippy Floppy.
Sounds great. See ya.
You've been listening to GamesAtWork.biz, the podcast about gaming technology and play. We are part of the Blueberry Podcasting Network and would like to thank the band Random Encounters for their song, Big Blue. You can follow us on Twitter at GamesAtWork_biz or at our website at GamesAtWork.biz.